Well, good morning.
Wow, I think you can hear me in the back. I'm sorry. Well, guests, we're especially glad that you're here, and I've got to let you know two things. Oh, here at Memorial Road, we have a great pulpit preacher. He's articulate, he's wise, he knows Scripture and brings insights to us. The second thing you need to know, I am not that pulpit preacher. In fact, you don't know all the things that happen behind the scenes. So before church began this morning, Scott Young agreed that he would introduce me. And I don't know if you noticed, in the middle of the communion service, he stepped across here and talked to Andy. He realized that I was going to preach, and he wanted plausible deniability for everything I said. So he asked Andy to introduce me. So, Scott, thank you. Jerry, that was a beautiful, beautiful set of comments for the Lord's Supper. I appreciated all of those things. Christmas is such a special time for some and a difficult time for others as well. Well, there are certain rhythms in my life, certain things that seem to repeat themselves over and over and over again. Here is one. I learn something and I'm motivated and inspired and interested and I feel good about learning that thing. And then I forget that thing. And later, I learn it again. And sometimes it's just an annoyance. I should have remembered that because I knew that. Other times, it's more existential. For instance, maybe somebody you love comes up to you and says, you know what I'd like for Christmas? I would like this, in this size, in this color, and you can get it here. And then you forget that, and you realize, I can't go back and ask again. And so that becomes existential. But sometimes it's actually a blessing when you learn something and you forget it and you learn it again, because what might have inspired you and motivated you and encouraged you and interested you, all of a sudden it happens again. So on November the 7th, the Oklahoman ran an article. The article talked about the Oklahoma Standard. I had known about the Oklahoma Standard, but frankly I had forgotten about the Oklahoma Standard. I hadn't paid much attention to it. The Oklahoma Standard was a theme that was really coined in the days and weeks following the Murrah bombing in 1995. In the article, there was a fellow who came in from out of state. He was here to serve and to help recover and to do work for all of us. And in the story, he encounters the governor of the state of Oklahoma at that time, Frank Keating. He did not realize it was the governor, but once he learned it was the governor, he reached into his wallet and he pulled out a dollar and he told Governor Keating, "This is my Oklahoma dollar." The governor said, Why are you calling that your Oklahoma dollar?" And the fella said, "From the moment I stepped foot in Oklahoma, I have wanted to try to pay for my lodging and for my meals and for my water and for my transportation. And every time I take out my wallet, one of your Oklahomans steps up and says, 'No, we've got that.'" The Oklahoma Standard. Now, I've got to divert for just a second. I love Oklahoma Christian, but there's one place on that campus that maybe I love more than any other place. And it really has connection to Murrah, the federal building, and the disaster that occurred. You see, in 1995, when that event occurred, that bomb exploded, it was so strong and so loud that even people on campus felt it and thought something had happened on campus. People left their offices to see what had happened. One of the things that has inspired our state for so long is there at ground zero was the survivor tree, a tree that all of its leaves were knocked off, limbs were damaged, the tree caught on fire. It should have died, and yet it survived. Pieces of that tree are planted all across the state of Oklahoma, and right between the library on the OC campus and the Gaylord University Center, we have our own Murrah survivor tree that's planted. I love that space. But that's not the end of the story. You see, 6.5 years later, 9/11 occurs. Oklahomans, because they knew the effects of disasters like this, went to New York City, to Manhattan, to provide aid and care and comfort. Relationships were forged between Oklahomans and New Yorkers. They became so close, in fact, that for every year since then, New Yorkers would come to spend time with their Oklahoma friends and family in April to commemorate the Murrah bombing. And in September, the Okies would go to New York to celebrate or commemorate and honor those who sacrificed so much during 9/11. So these folks had a connection to OC as well. Brad Robison, Ricky Lawson, they were part of the group that would bring the New Yorkers here, and they spent time on campus, and they loved their time on campus. They had banquets on campus and spent time on campus. We also found out that they were big softball fans, so they would go and root on our softball team. New Yorkers are very enthusiastic fans. Sometimes it would violate some of our rules on campus, but they were on our side, and so we overlooked some of that. But what you might not know is 2 weeks after 9/11, as they were excavating the rubble from the World Trade Center, they found a survivor tree. It was a calorie pear tree. They took it and they nursed it back to health. It had 10 offspring. 9 are there at the World Trade Center where the museum, the 9/11 museum is. The 10th one was placed in a minivan and driven by Ron Vega and his wife Judy. He is the chief architect of the 9/11 Museum in Manhattan. They took that small calorie pear tree and drove it from New York City to Oklahoma. And it's planted right next to our Murrah survivor tree on the Oklahoma Christian campus. We try to remember things so we don't forget. So middle of April and middle of September, if you ever drive by the front of campus, you see 168 U.S. flags and Oklahoma flags for us to not forget those who lost their lives in the Murrah bombing and the lessons we gathered from that. Okay, let me go back to that article in the Oklahoman, because there was more discussion of the Oklahoma standard. Kerry Watkins, who's the executive director of the Oklahoma City National Memorial and Museum, said there are really three things that encapsulate the Oklahoma standard. Show up to serve, rise up to honor, and step up to be kind. Man, I read those and I was reminded of the Oklahoma standard, and I thought, I love that stuff. And that fellow who was interviewed by the governor, he went on to say, you know what? Myself and everybody else who came from out of state and we saw how we were treated in Oklahoma, it has never happened to us anywhere else. When the Oklahoma standard is practiced, it upends the world because people don't expect it. They don't think that's going to happen in the natural course of things. Well, that made me think a bit more. Why did those things sound not so unfamiliar to me? And I realized it's because these are the things, service and honor and kindness, that God calls us to as believers. So, Matthew chapter 20. The mother of James and John comes to Jesus and says, I have a favor to ask. And Jesus says, what is it? And she says, when your kingdom comes in glory, would you please promise me that my sons, James and John, are sitting on your right and on your left? Now, the other apostles heard that, and they were upset about that. I've always wondered, were they upset because they realized that James and John and their mother overstepped their bounds? Or were they upset because their mom didn't get to Jesus first and ask for this kind of honor? And what was Jesus' response? He says, if you want to be great, you must be a servant to all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And what about honor? So, one of my favorite passages is in Romans chapter 12. There are a series, in the last half of that chapter, a series of 4 and 5 word statements that Paul makes to the church at Rome. And they are, if you live your life according to these statements, you live a good life. But in verse 10 of chapter 12, he says, honor others above yourselves. And that same Paul, writing to young Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24, he says, be kind to everyone. So you see, the Oklahoma standard that we celebrate, that the world doesn't expect, is really our standard as well. So if this is our standard, and if it's not what the world expects, and if we change things when we do things, do we have any evidence or stories of that? And so I thought a little bit more, and there are three Bible stories that I want to share with you. And you know these stories, I bet. Let me tell you, though, each of these stories kind of strikes me a little bit differently. The first story, I knew it growing up. I mean, I'm like a lot of you all. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, we were there. We grew up in classrooms with flannel graphs and flannel boards. I mean, we learned all of the stories. But this is a story that although I learned it, I didn't put it among my top 50, even though there is a miracle involved in this story. The second story I'm going to share is really a story that as a young boy I should have loved. I mean, we're talking armies, we're talking potential battles, we're talking another little line that if I had remembered it as a young man, this would have been the story that I would have gone back and told my friends at school. And you'll see what I mean here in just a minute. And then the third story maybe is in my top 10 stories from the Bible of all time, certainly the top 25. But as I look back on that story that talks about serving and honoring and being kind, I realize that I've kind of thought of it really as an answer to a trivia question rather than a story that can change lives. So here's the first story. Acts chapter 9. You know, we think of Paul as being the apostle who traveled around the world, starting churches and encouraging people. But the reality is Peter did that as well. In fact, we find that at this particular passage, it is a good time for the church. Peace is reigning through the land. There's not a lot of persecution. The church is growing. So Peter leaves and he goes to a small place called Lydda. And while he is there, he encounters a gentleman who has been paralyzed for 8 years and bedridden all that time. He heals him. And while he is in Lydda, there are some disciples in Joppa nearby. And there's a woman named Tabitha. We know two things about Tabitha. Tabitha spent her life doing good and helping the poor. Now, Tabitha gets sick and she dies, maybe suddenly. And the church is in mourning and they take two of their men and they send them to Lydda to find Peter and ask him to come. They get there, he says yes, he comes back. Peter arrives and he goes into the upper room where they have cleaned Tabitha's body and had her laid out. And he steps into this room, and while he is in there, he is immediately gathered around by widows. And these widows and poor people are showing Peter everything that Tabitha had made during her life. Remember, she did good and she took care of the poor. Now, we're trying to find lessons in this story. What happens when people learn about service, when outsiders hear Christians or followers of God doing acts of service? Peter sends all of the widows out of the room, and he hits his knees, and he prays. And then he says, "Tabitha, get up." Tabitha's eyes open. She sees Peter. She sits up. Peter grabs her by the hand and helps her up, and then he takes her to the widows and the disciples. And Luke tells us that word spread throughout Joppa, and many people became believers in Jesus. They became believers in Jesus because of the miracle, but also because of the acts of service. Tabitha's, the men who went to get Peter, and Peter himself in that moment. When we engage in acts of service, when we serve people, it's not what the world expects. And it can lead people to Jesus. I am so proud of this church body. I am so proud that Oklahoma will be housing more refugee families from Afghanistan than almost any other state in our union, with the exception of New York and California, two much, much larger states. I'm so proud of our classes and our Q groups and the individuals who are making efforts to to bring the Afghanis into a way where they can resettle and rebuild their lives, and maybe they'll find Jesus as well. Here's the second story. It comes from 1 Samuel chapter 24. Now, chapter 23 ends, and you've got a real angry individual here. You've got King Saul, who is so threatened by young David that he is doing everything he can to find and kill David. So this second story takes me to a place where I realize that sometimes, even in our world today, when people are divided and antagonistic, when they see appropriate honor being given by a follower of God, it can take them to a place of peace. So chapter 23 is ending, and Saul and his men almost capture David and his men. They are at the same mountain, and right then he gets word that the Philistines have come in and raided the country. So Saul has to do the king thing. He leaves and goes and drives out the Philistines. And then he learns at the beginning of chapter 24 of 1 Samuel that David and his men are at a place called En-Gedi. So King Saul grabs 3,000 of his best fighters throughout the land, and he goes to En-Gedi. In fact, he goes to a place called the Crags of the Wild Goats. And he's going through these sheep pens, and there is a cave there. And as a young man, this is the part that I think I would have really remembered. Here's the deal. I'll be delicate about this, but King Saul has to go to the bathroom. He needs privacy. And so he leaves his army outside. He leaves those who are pledging their lives to defend him outside the cave, and by himself he goes into the cave to have privacy. In that same cave in the back, guess who's there? David and his men. And they can't believe what has just happened. The men say to David, "This is what God told you. He said he would deliver your enemies into your hands. This is your chance." So David sneaks up to where King Saul is, and he cuts off with his knife a part of King Saul's robe. And immediately, he is conscience-stricken. He feels guilty. He doesn't touch King Saul, but he goes back to his men, and they can't believe exactly what has happened here. Your enemy was in your hands. It was in your grasp right there. And David comes back and tells them, "He is the anointed king of God. I cannot raise a finger to harm him, and neither will you." King Saul finishes and steps out of the cave. A couple of minutes later, David goes to the cave mouth and yells at King Saul. And he says, "King Saul, my king and my master, I want you to know all the things that you have been hearing about me, trying to get you and to usurp you and to kill you. It's not true. I had you in here in my grasp," and he held up the robe that he cut, "but I didn't harm you. I'm not after you." King Saul hears that, and he begins to cry. And King Saul says, "Is that you, David, my son?" And then he says, "Who has ever heard of someone having their enemy within his grasp and letting him go? You are a better man than I am, David. I now know that you deserve and will become the king of this country. And when you do, I ask that you not destroy my family." When proper honor is given, even an antagonist can move from violence to peace. Now, granted, in this story, it was only a temporary move, because King Saul still had it out for David the rest of his life. Two chapters later, we find that David also has an encounter where he could have taken King Saul's life, but he didn't again. So when we provide service, when we provide honor, people turn toward God and people turn toward peace. Here's the third story, John chapter 2. It's a wedding. And weddings back in the first century were amazing affairs. They went on for days and days, and lots of people, much of the community, was invited. And you never wanted to run out of stuff, because if you ran out of things, it just wasn't an inconvenience. It was shame on you and your family. At this wedding is Mary, the mother of Jesus. And Jesus and his disciples are at this wedding also. And I think I never really thought about this. Why was Jesus at this wedding? He wasn't at the wedding to begin his ministry. He wasn't at the wedding to do a miracle. He was at a wedding because he had been invited to the wedding. He was there out of kindness. You can't serve and you can't honor and you can't be kind unless you're present. And Jesus was present. And the worst possible thing happened. They ran out of wine. And Mary, the mother of Jesus, finds out about this, and she brings Jesus over and says to him, "They've run out of wine." Now, I love how moms can do this really, really well. She knew what Jesus could do, and she knew what she wanted him to do, but she was able to put all that in front of him without saying, "Jesus, you've got to do this." Jesus' response was, "Mom, it's not my time. Why are you involving me in this?" Mary hears that, and so she does what any good mom would do. She turned to the servants and said, "Whatever he says, do it." And then she leaves. And Jesus tells the servants, "Okay, those six large earthen pots, fill them with water." And they do so, and then he says to them, "Take a sip of that to the master of the wedding." And they do that. When kindness is expressed, the world takes notice because it's unusual. And sometimes it even causes us believers to believe even more. You see, when the master tasted that wine that had been created by the miracle of Jesus, he calls over the groomsmen and he says, "I can't believe this. This is amazing," because everybody starts out with the good, high-quality stuff at the beginning, and the longer the ceremony, the longer the party goes, the worse it becomes. But you've saved the best for last. When Christians and followers of God are kind to others, it amazes some people. And not only that, in that passage, it says those disciples whom I know believed in Jesus, when they witnessed what Jesus had done, it says they believed even more. Okay, so three stories that talk about service and honor and kindness, things that we know to do. But let's face it, these three stories, I mean, they're kind of special stories. I mean, we're talking an apostle. We're talking a future king of Israel. We're talking the Son of God. How really can doing these kinds of things, being servants and providing honor when honor is due and being kind, how can that really change our world or our people today? So let me tell you two other stories, and then the lesson will be yours. And these stories come out of writings from Max Lucado. Here's the first story. 2009. 22 men and women travel to London. They fly to London, then they take a train, and they are met at the train station by a 100-year-old man. And it's reminiscent of when they were met at the train station by this same man 70 years before. You see, in 1939, there was a young man named Nicholas Winton. He lived in London. He was a stockbroker on the London Stock Exchange. He had heard some really terrible rumors that were coming out of Czechoslovakia. You see, what he had heard was that Nazis were moving in and were separating families. They were separating Jewish moms and dads from their kids. The moms and dads were being taken to concentration camps, and these young kids were being left on their own with nobody to care for them. So Nicholas took vacation time, and he spent his own money, and he goes to Prague, Czechoslovakia. And what he had heard, he sees as true. And it was amazing because very quickly, the stranger who had come from London, Jewish moms and dads were asking him to take care of their children. They were willing to entrust their kids in someone they had just met because things were so bad.
Nicholas goes back to London. He continues to do his day job. He's working on the London Stock Exchange. But in his spare time, he convinces the nation of England to allow entry to any young people coming from Czechoslovakia. And then he goes and he meets with lots of families and he gets them to agree to take in young people, orphans, or those who have lost their parents in some way from Czechoslovakia. And he raises money to do this. In March of 1939, the first transport of young kids from Czechoslovakia arrive in London. And that happens six more times over the next 5 months. In fact, because of Nicholas Winton, 669 young people leave Czechoslovakia and find new homes in London. On September the 1st, it was going to be the largest group that was going to come. He had 250 young people ready and paid for and arranged to come to London from Czechoslovakia. And that's the day Nazi Germany invaded Poland. And every border across Europe closed. 669 people were saved by Nicholas Winton. Now, the war is over. Nicholas doesn't talk about this to anybody. 49 years later, his wife goes up in their attic to look for something, and she finds a scrapbook that she did not recognize. She opens the scrapbook and sees all these photos of young people with their names. She brings it downstairs and shows it to Nicholas, and reluctantly, he told her the story of what he did to help these kids get to safety. Word begins to get out. This group of 22 go to thank him. Hundreds of others go to thank him. It was estimated back about 12 years ago that there are 7,000 children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren who would not be alive today but for the act of Nicholas Winton. Max Lucado finishes this part of the story, and he says, "Chalk up one for the ordinary man. Chalk up one for the common guy." Here's the second story. It began 100 years ago this year, 1921. So a fellow named Lewis Laws was hired to be the prison warden at the notorious Sing Sing prison 30 miles outside of New York City. This was a maximum security prison. We're talking murderers, kidnappers, burglars. I mean, the most violent of all inmates were in Sing Sing. Lewis was married to Catherine, and they had three young daughters. Catherine was told before they went to Sing Sing, "Whatever you do, never set foot in that prison. Don't go in there. It is a dangerous place." And she said, "My husband and I are going to take care of these men. They will take care of us." They live 3/4 of a mile from the prison. Early on when they were there, there was a basketball game in the prison. Catherine shows up at the game with her three daughters, and they sit in the stands amidst the inmates. Later, she learns that one of the inmates was blind. She teaches him Braille so he can read. She learns later that there were several deaf inmates. They could not hear, and so she learned sign language so she could communicate with them. For 16 years, she poured her life into theirs. She loved them, and they loved her back. One morning in 1937, that was really put to the test. You see, that morning, Lewis Laws, the prison warden, did not show up to work. The rumor very quickly was confirmed that the day before, Catherine had been in a car accident and she had been killed. The prison was stunned. The next day, Catherine was her body was placed at their home 3/4 of a mile from Sing Sing prison. The interim warden was making his rounds. As he walked around the prison, he noticed that all of the men were outside at the fence facing toward the home of the Laws. And they were quiet and they were somber and many of them were crying. They wanted to be as close as they could to the woman who had poured her life into theirs for 16 years. That interim prison warden made a snap decision. He announced to the inmates, he said, "Okay, I understand you want to pay your respects. I'm going to unlock the gate. and you can go to the home to pay your respects, but you need to be back tonight in the prison. He opened the gates, the prisoners went, they paid their respects, and every single one of them, the murderers, the kidnappers, the violent criminals, they all came back to prison. So you don't have to be an apostle. You don't have to be a future king of Israel. You don't have to be the son of God to serve and to honor and to show kindness to others that can change their lives and can change the world. So Nicholas Winton, he was given a ring by some of those people that whose lives he had saved from Czechoslovakia. And on the ring was inscribed a quote from the Jewish Talmud. It said, "Save a life, save the world." My challenge for myself in 2022 is to live up to our standard, to live up to the Oklahoma standard, to serve and to honor and to be kind. And hopefully that will change lives and bring people to Christ, and I know it'll change my life. Well, this is the last Sunday of 2021. This might be the perfect day for you to put on Christ in baptism. It might be the perfect day for you to confess a sin that has been weighing you down. It might be the perfect time for you to ask for encouragement from the brothers and sisters here at this church. If that's the case, please let us know. Please come forward while we all stand and while we sing.